Because you see, I lost 35 pounds in 9 months. I thought I had it made. Wrong. Because later I read that it said, once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out emotionally and physically. You know, it's the spiritual malady that has to be overcome. I had lost the weight physically, but I wasn't going to stay lost, and I wasn't going to recover if I didn't grow spiritually. And this is a book about spirituality, this information that I have here. And so, yes, I believed then a year and a month, let's see, April, May, a year and a month later, I finally came to believe that, yes. Well, I borrowed the book from the library, and I subscribed for it again, kept it for a month. And then one day I went to a meeting, and somebody was sharing something that was sound very exciting to me. She was quoting stuff in this book. And you know, the places that I got the most out of this book was recovering alcoholics that came to OA to lose weight. They knew the book, but they didn't know how to apply it to the compulsive overeating, but they knew the book. And I started listening to what they were saying, and I thought, wow, where are they getting that from? You know? And so I started asking them where they got it, and they started pointing me out to this, you know? And the nice thing about this is, at a time in Houma where there wasn't a lot of recovery and a lot of meetings, still isn't, but I started going to AA just to learn. And I began, AA women began to ask me to sponsor them and asked me to take them through the steps. It was the neatest thing. It was just such an inspirational thing. And then one time this guy asked me to help him. And you know, they say women are not supposed to sponsor men and all. Well, I don't know. When God puts people in your life, you just don't know what's going to happen, okay? Well, this guy, I mean, he was a down-and-out alcoholic. He had already been in federal prison. I mean, he didn't have no family. He had 9 kids, and none of them were speaking to him. And he was living in Houma. And come to find out, he met me at AA, and he had also been working with my husband on the rig where Jimmy was working. And he asked me to help him take him through the steps. And I told my husband, I told my kids, I said, this guy's going to be coming over here. I'm going to be helping him. I want y'all to be kind to him because he doesn't have a family. And he's living here. And he's lonely, and he wants to recover. He had five weeks of sobriety, and he had gone out after 2 years for a day or so. So I mean, I figured he had those 2 years whether he had drank or not. Well, he started coming by the house, and my youngest son, I wasn't home one day. Jimmy and I went home, and he was washing his truck, and he told. The guy's name is Red. I'll just say his name. It's hard for me to talk about somebody without using their name. He won't care. Shad was washing his car, and Red drove up, and he said, Shad said, my mom's not home. He said, well, I'll come back late. And Shad said, no, you stay. You stay here because they're going to be back really soon. You stay. He said he never had a young boy beg him to stay to meet his mama. And then he had a birthday during that time, and we gave him a birthday party. And my kids, it was a Friday night, and kids used to go out at 10 o'clock at night. I mean, when we thought it was time for them to be coming home, they were just going out. Well, anyway, the kids stayed, and we gave him a birthday party. And that touched that man so much. He said he never thought that young kids could give up their Friday night for him to have a birthday party. And so that man today lives in Missouri, and he's been sober for over 25 years. And he came from Missouri to Houma to our 50th anniversary 3.5 years ago. And I mean, it's those kinds of things. I don't think people can tell people what they need to do. I think God tells people what they're supposed to be doing. But he gives that, he gives my family, not just me. He gives my family that credit for helping him to stay sober, you know, because I don't know. They say we're not supposed to take credit, and I'm not. I really believe it's God working in people's lives. And for my husband and my kids to be able to help me with that. Also, I have a swing in my backyard, and that's where I heard a lot of fifth steps out there on that swing in my backyard. And he and I were sitting out there one day, and he started talking. And he said he told me things that he had never told another human being. And that's when he started, you know, getting more and more free. And one day, he was real hot-headed, like alcoholics are. And he called me one day, and he was going to kill his boss. I mean, he's going to kill him. He was so mad at him. I'm going to kill him. And I was fast talking, okay? Fast talking. He said he never heard such a fast talker as me, you know, but he said I talked him down from that. And another time, we were sitting at my dining room table, and I was trying to get him to get this idea of God, you know. And on page 98, it says, you know, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anybody. The only thing he has to do is trust God and clean house. And one day, he was just being so hard-headed and stubborn, and I picked up my fist, and I said, I'm going to brand that on you if you don't listen. And he said, I wondered if that little fist could have hurt me, you know? But he never forgot it. I said, I want you to remember this. It's 2 pages before 100. And so he talks about that all the time. It's 2 pages before 100 that you have to trust God and, you know, clean house. So anyway, you know, I have a lot of experience with sponsoring people, and that's one of the joy. His story is one of my great joys of that. And I know it was always God working. I know that. The program really is timeless. It is timeless. And on Roman numerals 13, XIII, it tells us that this was the forward to the first edition, which was published in 1939. It used the word we. You know, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that's why I can say that I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I have recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm not cured, and I know that. But I know that I'm not hopeless today. My mind and my body is not hopeless because I can abstain. And I can abstain by the grace of God. And I can abstain by the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm grateful for that. And the book tells me to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, and that's in italics, is the main purpose of this book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so in order for me to show other compulsive overeaters precisely how to recover, I use this book. And I use a lot of my other stuff also. But this is my basic text. I know that the 12 steps of, I got me a big one of these too. It's the AA 12 and 12. I just adore this. Now you have to understand, I was groomed in this literature because in almost 32 years ago, we didn't have any literature. But we have a masterpiece in this Overeaters Anonymous book. It's really, really good. And the traditions are really, really good. Another book that's fantastic is this Overeaters Anonymous. This is the second edition. I remember when I first came in, people were telling me, we're going to have our own big book. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And that's another reason why I waited to buy the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was waiting for the Overeaters Anonymous one, okay? But 4 months, 4 months into recovery, I finally bought me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? And this came out a few years later. I think it was in 1980, the first one came out, the brown one. They call it the brown book. This is the second edition. But I was disappointed in this book, but also I loved it because the foreword is so valuable, the information that they have in here. And the ABCs in the back of the appendix, the disease of the body, the disease of the mind, and the disease of the spirit has such valuable, valuable information. If you don't have this book, I urge you to get it, and I urge you to read the appendix and the foreword. The stories are good, too. They really are. But the information that they give us is so, so vital. And what I loved about the second edition is that, let me see here. It talks about the seriousness of the body. And this was in 2000 that this information was put in here. Now, this is 10 years later, and I'm sure that it has increased a lot. But it says that as of 2000, 55% or 97 million adults in the United States are overweight or obese, with at least 33% of adults considered overweight and 22% considered obese. Obesity-related medical conditions now contribute to 300,000 deaths in the United States each year. The total U.S. cost attributable to obesity amounts to over $99 billion in 1995. Over half of those dollars were direct medical costs. Obesity has been recognized since 1985 as a chronic disease and is now the second leading cause of preventable death, exceeded only by cigarette smoking. This is in our own literature. I would love to know the updated information about this. But what I love is that they did print it in the second edition of this. You know, I love the let's see if I can find it, the mission statement of Overeaters Anonymous. I think I have it in here. Excuse me. Can't find it. Oh yeah, I wanna. This is the mission statement of Overeaters Anonymous, okay? The specific and primary purpose of the cooperation is to aid those with the problem of compulsive overeating to overcome that problem through a 12-step program of recovery. The general purpose and power is to promote the public health and to work with and furnish charitable and cultural assistance to those with problems of obesity. It's that to furnish charitable and cultural assistance. And that's what the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous has given me. It has given me a system. It has given me something that I could cultivate my soul, the soul of my soul. It has given me that charitable love. They saw things inside of me that I didn't even know were there. They helped develop that which is inside of me. And I have been able to learn and grow and be willing to give it back. And for that, I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for that because OA helped develop my skills. Use this curiosity. Use this asking too many questions. My mother used to always tell me, Janice, you're never going to amount to nothing. Maybe it was because I didn't sweep the floor right, I didn't fold the clothes right, I didn't wash the dishes right. Who knows? But she told me that often, that I would never amount to nothing. And I mean, you know, when you hear that in your mind, when anything starts good happening to you, you wonder, well, how can this be happening? I'm not supposed to amount to nothing. But OA has helped me develop to amount to this child of God that I am, to heal my soul, to be able to know that I am worthy. I'm a worthy woman. I know that I have self-worth today, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful that OA has given me this personal kindness and this personal love. And, you know, y'all inviting me here again. Barbara worked really, really hard on getting this together. And she met me 2.5 years ago when I spoke at Glenrose. I did a retreat over there. And when they decided to do this retreat, she said, I want Janice to do it. And they called me a whole year in advance. And I said, I'm going to mark that down. You know, we've been planning it all this time. And Wanda invited me to come in a few days early to spend time with her and meet her husband, and I just loved it. When I went to conference last year, and I roomed with Wanda, and she wanted her husband to hear me on the phone, to hear this accent, and so she put me on the phone with him and everything. And when we hung up, when we got ready to hang up, he said, "All right, 10-4." I got off that phone, was killing myself laughing. I said, "Wanda," he said, "bye, 10-4. You know, that's trucker talk, our field talk, because I've heard my husband say that too. So I call him 10-4, you know. And when I was planning to come to spend a few days with her and all, I said, "You tell 10-4 I'm coming to see him," you know. And so when I met him on Tuesday night, I said, "You get up from there and meet me, 10-4. He said, "Is that that woman with that funny voice?" You know. And so it's all kind of fun like that, you know. Had a real good time. I spoke at the Wednesday morning OA meeting in Abilene. Spoke at the treatment center last night. Here tonight, you know. I mean, I'm just really, really grateful for being able to have developed my skills. When I first came into OA, I didn't understand these steps. Nobody else did. You know, we just kept reading them. We kept reading them. But, you know, there was something in that packet that meant a lot to me. It was called Just for Today. Y'all know that little card? Just for Today. I said, you know, I don't understand these steps. I don't understand these traditions. But they must be very important because they're on every piece of literature that we have. You know, I was reading this literature, and on one side was the steps, and on the other side, was the tradition. But they had this card in there, and I read that every day. And I thought, I might not be able to work these steps, but I can do some of these things that this card says. And this is what this card told me. It says, "Just for today, I would try to live through this day only and not tackle my whole life problem at once. I can do anything for 12 hours that would appall me if I felt that I had to do it for the rest of my lifetime." You know? And that's why I knew that I could be abstinent for 12 hours at a time. You know? "And just for today, I would be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. Just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will study. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration." And that's one of the things that I started doing when I first came into OA. I started reading beside novels or love novels, what they call True Story Magazine, and watching soap operas and
romance.
Modern romance, yeah. Writing romance, having my own romance, you know. "And so just for today, I will exercise my soul in three ways. I will do somebody a good turn and not get found out. If anybody knows of it, it will not count. I will do at least two things I don't want to do just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it." That was hard. But I started trying to do that. "Just for today, I will be agreeable. I will look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and not try to improve or regulate anybody except myself." Hard. But I started trying to do it. "Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from two pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. During that half hour, sometimes I would try to get a better perspective of my life. I had to start thinking about my life, not everybody else's life, my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. Especially, I will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful and to believe that as I give to the world, so the world will give to me. I read this every day. Every day I read this for a long, long, long time. And still sometimes I continue to read it. I would like to close with something about I'm your disease. I hate meetings. I hate God. I hate anyone who has a program. To all who come in contact with me, I wish you dead and I wish you suffering. Allow me to introduce myself. I am the disease of compulsive overeating, cunning, baffling, and powerful. That's me. I have killed millions, and I am pleased. I love to catch you with the element of surprise. I love pretending I am your friend and lover. I have given you comfort, have I not? Wasn't I there when you were lonely? When you wanted to die? Didn't you call me? I was there. I love to make you hurt. I love to make you cry. Better yet, I love when I make you so numb you can neither hurt or cry. You can't feel anything at all. This is true glory. I will give you instant gratification, and all I ask of you is long-term suffering. I've been there for you always. When things were going right in your life, you invited me. You said you didn't deserve these good things. I was the only one who would agree with you. Together, we were able to destroy all things good in your life. People don't take me seriously. They take strokes seriously, heart attacks seriously. Even diabetes they take seriously. Fools that they are. They don't know that without my help, these things would not be possible. Isn't that a truth? That is a truth. To be abstinent is about willingness, not struggle. If you are willing to be abstinent, this is a state of great humility. If you are trying to be abstinent, this is a state of confusion. A willingness to be abstinent implies that you do not know how to do it, but are willing to learn. Trying to be abstinent implies you should be able to do it, but are struggling with it. Willingness to be abstinent involves acceptance. Trying to be abstinent involves condemnation. If you are willing to be abstinent, you are open to receive. If you are trying to be abstinent, you are closed to guidance. If you have been trying to give up the old ways and have condemned yourself for failure to do so, simply be willing to learn how the old ways may be replaced with ways of peace. If you are trying to be abstinent, you will fear failure. If you are willing to be abstinent, even failure may be used as a teaching device. If you are trying to be abstinent, you will fear not being able to be abstinent. If you will judge yourself a failure. If you are willing to be abstinent, no setback becomes a problem, for you know you will be shown. If you are trying, you are attempting to be abstinent by yourself. If you are willing to be abstinent, you are asking for guidance. Trying to be abstinent places the responsibility on you. But willing to be abstinent places the responsibility on God. Willingness to be abstinent is, in a sense, a prayer. Trying to be abstinent is an act of separation from your higher power. When you try, there is resistance. When you become willing, there is acceptance. If you are trying to be abstinent, everything is interference. If you are willing to be abstinent, everything is of assistance. The freely made choice to be abstinent is the most important decision you make each day. because it speaks for your willingness to be abstinent each day. Abstinence is a voluntary restraint from indulging a desire or appetite for certain bodily activities that are widely experienced as giving pleasure. Not engaging in the problematic behavior connotes increased self-control and the hope of improved social interactions and personal health as a consequence, author unknown. So, I mean, you know, we're dealing with a very serious illness, and we're dealing with a beautiful solution. I know I can tell people are getting restless, and some people are wanting to leave, so I'll bring this to a close tonight. Thank you all very much for listening.